Route 616, your home for all fans of Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 35 of Route 616. We are back, and we have Dan here again. That's crazy. 2 weeks
Shockingly,
in a row.
He hasn't died of old age.
Yeah, really. One of these weeks,
sorry,
we'll come
so
back
fun.
With the unfortunate news. Hopefully not for a long time, though, because we love our Dan. No.
Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel the love.
Well, I mean, if you die, we'd have to replace you with other people named Dan, and our options are severely limited.
You could go with Moi Moi.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Next generation.
Just upgrade our burns.
Yeah. Speaking of, I guess, since Moi Moi was mentioned, we can talk about the bonus episode, which is coming later this month, maybe 2 weeks from now, we'll see. That is about video games. It's going to be about our favorite video games, so tune back for that, because that should be a really fun episode. Next, the month after that, is our least favorite slash disappointed video games, and then after that is the Sharknado franchise, so keep... Stay tuned for all of those, because all three of those should be really fun episodes.
Yeah, we've got really good stuff coming up. Although, I'm going to put it out right now. We need to limit the length of times we're allowed to talk about Borderlands and the best video game series.
I've already been thinking about that.
No more than 50% of the podcast can be discussions about Borderlands.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Although she may diverge off into Destiny or Monkey Island, you know.
She's already threatened to just talk about Borderlands.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I know.
Well, I guess we will get started on our comics for today, which is a... I don't really know what descriptive word to use for this lineup, but it's a decent lineup, I guess. Yeah, shite
sounds
about
right. On
first
reading, I enjoyed every single comic we're covering today.
I don't agree with... I did not, but almost all of them.
But, I haven't even read them, and I know they're shite.
Well, you're right about at least one of them, so... but anyway, let's start with Avengers issue number 7, which is the story is titled Their Darkest Hour.
Oh, yeah, just dump it on me. That's great.
You knew this ahead of time.
oh, I didn't know
ahead
going
of time,
first.
I mean like 10 minutes ago. the Stanley and Jack Kirby title, of course. God. We got Chick Stone on the inks. What, you don't... Are you a little tired of Stan
no,
and
go,
Jack?
No, go. Shut up. Shut up. Do your job.
I mean, Jack I'm and... a little tired of Stan and Jack at this point, so I can't blame him.
Jack, Chick on the cover, of course. Already semicolon lettered. This is a June 1964 release. Halfway through the year, thank God. 22-page story. And this one is for Dan. Start us off, buddy.
Oh, God. Can we just start talking about how lazy this cover was?
Yeah, we can.
Oh, my word.
We had to get everybody on the cover, Dan.
Well, they do get everybody on the cover, and clearly they kind of prioritize Thor as being their biggest hero for their company.
Yeah, they kind of really are going that route at this point.
Yeah, well, he started as Marvel's answer to Superman. And at this point, we're still at the tail end of Thor's Superman because he doesn't really start turning into Thor until he starts going with the old-fashioned speech.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. But, yeah, he's
right
clearly...
Right now, he's just Superman with a hammer.
Yeah, he's the hero at the moment. But, yeah, so we'll go into the basic synopsis here, right off the map, Marvel database. And it's, the story is Their Darkest Hour. And we go with Iron Man faces the Avengers, who suspended him for a week after he refused to assist him a few days ago. I remember that. In Asgard, the Enchantress and the Executioner are banished to Earth by Odin. Couldn't be banished to, like, the Dead Zone or something. I have to go to Earth. That's great. Let's just take the biggest pieces of shit and give them to, you know, humans.
But they kept Loki.
I have no response to that. I really don't. Okay, on Earth they find Zemo, who had escaped the authorities, and they team up with him to stop Captain America. The Enchantress's ultimate motive, however, is to get Thor by her side.
Yeah, this is peak bad, Stan.
Yeah, this is not really starting promising. After a training session fighting professional wrestlers in a gym, Captain America scolds Rick Jones for trying on Bucky's old uniform.
He's got to get his heat back somehow, brother.
Oh, yeah. I love this part.
This brings back memories of Zemo and sparks again his will for revenge on his old enemy. After
this
Giant...
I need to point this out.
Okay.
This is the point where I started to hate Rick Jones.
The thing about this is, the part about this is, looking back, like, why would... Rick is actually kind of, like, he's actually an asshole for putting that suit on. Like,
yeah,
Cap literally has PTSD.
Yeah, and he knows it's been, like, 3 weeks for Cap.
Yeah. Like, Rick Jones is actually a fucking asshole for putting
yeah,
that
Yeah, Bucky died, like, 3 weeks ago as far as Cap has experienced time. And Bucky's like, oh, I'll just replace him. It'll be awesome.
Yeah. Sure.
But anyways...
I'm sorry, I'm not really invested, so, you know.
Interesting.
Well, we know you love Captain yeah. America, so.
Oh, God, yeah, he's my favorite. Okay. After Giant Man and the Wasp depart to the jungle to do some research on ants, Cap gets the visit of the executioner posing as an ex-Nazi to lure the hero into the Amazon jungle to face Zemo. Meanwhile, the Enchantress successfully captures Thor by hypnotizing him. She uses a spell that somehow convinces Thor that his teammates are evil. Probably didn't need a lot of spell on that one. In South America, Cap easily gets rid of the natives fighting for Baron Zemo. Okay, no problem. But falls into a deep game trap. Called by Thor back to New York, Giant Man and the Wasp arrive by heliocopter to get attacked by the God of Thunder. Hearing this on TV, Stark decides to intervene as Iron Man, despite his banishment from the Avengers. Well, that's good of him. Just has to be the center of fucking attention, doesn't he?
I mean, it is Tony Stark.
Yeah, that's fair. The Enchantress is remotely watching Zemo's progress in defeating Cap. When she sees that the hero is still alive at the bottom of the pit, she tries to help by causing a cave-in, but it only gives the Cap his opportunity to escape his prison. He defeats Zemo's forces and the Baron tries to escape. Captain America stows away on board the escape ship without Zemo's suspicions. Clever. Meanwhile, Iron Man brings Thor back to his senses. Zemo's ship arrives in New York and he attacks the Avengers. When Cap makes his presence known to Zemo, the Enchantress takes the ship back to the executioner who subdues the hero. The Masters of Evil flee before the rest of the team reaches them, but Thor generates a space warp that sends the ship who knows where. The team decides to get ready, because they will be back. And not entirely horrifyingly bad.
It's not that bad of an issue.
No, it's
like
not.
Like I said, I wouldn't want to read it again, but like I said off air.
Yeah, it's the definition of fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to read, and you'll never think about it again once it's done.
Yeah, and reading it that one time, I was willing to give it 3 stars.
Yeah, I gave it 3 stars on that first read through, and I hated it rereading it for this.
Yeah, no, it's not entirely horrible. I mean, for what it is, you've made me, you know, read summaries of much worse. You really
I sure
have. Yeah.
I'm sure I'll make you read much worse yet to come.
It's awesome to know. Just awesome.
I know you're glad you spend your Friday evenings with us. So.
I mean, I was peeking ahead on my progress in the main order, and I've got a 1.6 rated issue coming up. So there is much worse. I've got approximately 2,000 million model issues to get through before I get back onto the main issue.
The DC fanboy loves this time here in the Marvel in the Marvel reading order.
We could start a DC one and inflict all those terrible Blue Beetle stories on him.
Just give me one issue of Brave and the Bold. That's all I ask. One issue of Brave and the Bold. You can even pick it. God. Oh. Just kill me now.
Well, let us move on to another great story. Strange Tales, issue number 123, the A story, which, of course, is Human Torch story. And this one is called The Birth of the Beetle. That's right, he was in the Spider-Man film first. So this is a Stan Lee title, of course. We have Carl Burgos on art.
That's actually an exciting moment.
And this is his first work in the order.
No, it is not. Carl Burgos invented the original Human Torch.
The first in the main order, I should say.
Yeah. Fair enough. He's done an awful lot already in this order, though.
Yeah. This is an exciting moment, because that is a big deal that they got him back here. In the Silver Age, we got cover art by Jack and Sol Borowski. We got letters by Sam Rosen. This is a May 1964 release, a 14-page story. Gets an extra page, and I will take this one. Get ready. This is a long synopsis, folks. On the way to take the girls out to the World's Fair, the Thing and the Human Torch soon find themselves dealing with a new costume villain known as the Beetle, a disenfranchised inventor who wishes to make it rich the easy way. Thwarting the Beetle's thefts and battling him on the World's Fair playground, the two heroes eventually defeat the Beetle and turn him over to the authorities. That's literally it.
Oh, wow. They might have cut too much out of this. I mean, this is mostly a fight issue, but...
That's completely exhausting. What's the big details there?
What's the big details they left out there, Bill?
Well, Torch and Thing managed to lose to the Beetle like 3 times in 14 pages.
Yeah, they definitely don't win right away, but I guess that's the eventually part of that.
Yeah. I don't know, it just seems a little too brief when they overlook the fact that two members of the premier superhero team couldn't beat an asshole with metal wings for like 3 attempts.
I will say the art is really nice here. Carl Burgos rules.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, not a lot happens in this comic. It's mostly just a fighting issue.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
The Beetle sucks, but...
I had a decent amount of fun reading this. I gave it 3 stars.
I only gave it 2. I don't think it was that good. This is the weakest
so
torch issue.
So between the two of us, we hit the site average because it's sitting pretty much right at 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, it's whatever. I didn't hate it. Could have been worse, but it wasn't that good.
My rating
the
was
Beatles
inflated.
Design is legendary.
Okay, yeah, my rating was inflated a bit by a bunch of the intangibles, like
your Beetle
things
mark?
Starting to become a regular thing in the comic, the invention of the Beetle, who I knew from
the World
reading
War
more modern
II?
Comics, and Carl Burgos returning to the Order.
Yeah, it's got a lot of historical value, but and sometimes that will affect my rating. This wasn't one of those times. It wasn't. I could have let it this time, and it would have been justified, like you. But it wasn't that good.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you because I can see it also being a 2-star.
Yeah. I guess we will move on to the B story. That was a pretty quick one. This one is called The Challenge of Loki, and you're wondering, wait, aren't we in Strange Tales? Yes, we are. This is the Doctor Strange story. This is Doctor Strange first meeting with Loki.
This could be fun.
Yes, this should be fun. Steve Ditko, of course, gets some credits here as co-writer and artist. George Russo does the inks, and Artie Simic does the letters. And this is a 9-page story. This one also got an extra page, and this one is for Bill.
I want to mention before I start, I'm not sure how much credit Steve Ditko gets at this one, because Stan Lee definitely goes peak petty bitch with the announcement on the splash page of the guest appearance of the Mighty Thor, drawn in the somewhat different Ditko style. In fact, it's so different, we're trying to hide it from Jack Kirby.
Really?
So he just starts taking really direct petty shots at Steve.
I have a feeling we'll see more of those, too, yet to come.
Anyway, the story opens with Strange meditating in his Sanctum Sanctorum, and he's observed by Loki, who's a little salty that his previous hopes of having most of Earth's superheroes defeated by the Enchantress and the Executioner was foiled, has decided to move on to using Strange to defeat Thor.
Good idea. Good idea.
So he goes and he sends an image to Thor in his meditation of himself all wrapped up in chains and saying how Thor is a huge threat and he was locked up for trying to prevent Thor from attacking Earth. And Strange questions it, but Loki tells him that, no, he's just acting like a hero to trick everyone. And so Strange decides to investigate, and he picks up a huge scent of evil emanating off the chains. And Loki's like, haha, excellent. He doesn't suspect the evil's coming from me. And so he convinces Strange to steal Thor's hammer for him. And then he'll be able to basically save Earth from Thor. And he gives Strange a small piece of the leather from the handle of Thor's hammer, which he can use to track it. And he's like, excellent, go ahead, and I'll get back to you once you've stolen the hammer. And so Strange is not at all convinced by Loki's story. He basically figures that Loki's trying to play him. And so he, but he figures he'll let it play out for a bit and see where this is going. And so he starts looking around. He finds Thor flying by the hammer. So he sends a magic hand out to go and grab the hammer, which causes Thor to start falling. And Loki's on Asgard gloating about how he's going to take over the Earth now that Thor's defeated. And his first step... But Thor was a... Strange was smart enough to realize that no evil was coming from the sense was coming from the hammer, so clearly it was Loki, not Thor, that was the evil one. But Loki's like, haha, it's too late for you to have realized that I'm the evil one, and he starts trying to defeat Thor. Thor, I keep saying that. Fuck, I shouldn't do this when I'm tired. Keeps trying to defeat Strange, and they have a big old magical battle, and Strange is actually holding his own pretty well, given that he's fighting a literal god. And, while he's fighting Loki, he releases the magical hold on the hammer. So the hammer returns to Thor before he hits the ground. And Thor starts tracing where it came from to go figure out who tried to steal his hammer. And as Thor gets close, it scares Loki off. So he retreats back to Asgard. And Thor's like, I don't sense any evil coming from here anymore, and just keeps flying past. And Strange sits there and thinks about how awesome Thor is and how he would be great to build an entire comic line around, and that's how the story ends.
Okay.
Not as good as you'd think it'd be, right?
No.
This one only got a 3 out of me, which was surprising because I went into this expecting to give it a 4 or 5.
You just give out 3s like they're freaking Halloween candy, don't you?
If 1 is hated it, 2 is didn't like it. I liked this, so it got a 3, but I expected to give this a 4 or 5.
Yeah, 3 is my rating for just a decent comic, and I also gave this one a 3.
Decent / fine / liked it. Like, I didn't dislike it, and I didn't hate it, so that's why it gets a 3.
I guess it's better than being kicked in the balls. Sort of.
I think a lot of the plot holes were painted over by how awesome it was to see Thor. Or not Thor. God, why does my brain keep doing it? See Strange fighting with Loki.
Yeah.
Strange and Loki's always a fun combo.
I think if I had any issue with it at all, it's that they're really, really trying hard now to do a lot of crossovers from, you know, people from one title in another title just to try and sell titles. And it's really like, you know, if something like Doctor Strange should be allowed to stand on its own.
Well, it you doesn't know, help that with Doctor Strange, Stan has been very petty the whole time so far because he doesn't like the character.
Granted, but yeah, it's Doctor Strange could and did end up being quite a good title.
If this one almost feels like Stan thought that he needed help to like sell his title.
Yeah, he needed Thor to be in there because then people who care about the real comics will come and read it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you on that because I'm sure you're right. But
we could be wrong, but like that's kind of what it felt like, just from the pettiness from Stan coming through on the splash page and all everything.
Yeah.
And as I've said before, it's well documented that Stan hated the concept of Doctor Strange and had no intention of actually running a comic with it.
Yeah.
It was it's still shocking we saw him in that Fantastic Four issue.
Yeah.
I think that was mostly a case of, since I have him, I might as well try to sell him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess that covers that.
It does.
Let's move on to Marvel's premier comic. Not anymore, but back in these times, Fantastic Four issue number 29, and this one's called It Started on Yancey Street. Of course, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and then we've got Chick Stone again helping out in inks. He's getting a lot more ink work recently, deservedly, because he's really good. They do the covers, well, Jack and Chick. Letters by Sam Rosen, June 1964 release, and this is a 22-page story, and I like this cover, personally.
This is a great cover.
The Watcher in the background of the Starry Night is really cool.
Yeah,
and this one's for Bill,
this is
course,
one of the first things that feels like a modern cover.
That's actually fair. That's very fair, yeah.
I'm glad we all agree that this one's a good cover, then.
That's
Dan
important.
Agreed to that.
Well, there were a lot of titles that I originally picked up because the cover got my attention. Right. When I first started reading comics, you know, when I was young, it was just you read whatever. But as, you know, I started collecting them in a sort of a more serious vein.
Back in the 30s, yeah.
Back in the 60s. Asshole. One of the things that would sell me on a comic was if the cover got my attention. Right? This is one of the reasons I bought the original Commandy when I saw the first issue. Was the cover was incredibly intriguing. Right? It was very similar to a novel by Andre Norton called Daybreak in 2021 or something like that. And I saw it. And it was like, this looks good. This looks like this could be really, really different. It was, and I enjoyed it immensely for, you know, until they pulled Jack off it. But covers matter. They matter a lot.
Yeah, they do.
Right.
And this one does it really well because not only does it give you a simple yet intriguing cover, it also doesn't fall into one of the big traps of early comics and spoil the twist.
Yes.
Because a lot of times you'll see the cover with, like, guest starring a surprise villain, and there's a big fuck-off picture of Doctor Doom right on the cover, and it's like, well, there goes the surprise.
And this one does have a good surprise, too, so it's really good that it's not spoiled. Yet. But anyway, I guess on that note, let's get into that story.
Yeah, go for it.
Alright, so this one opens with the Fantastic Four making the mistake of trying to walk down Yancey Street and getting just tormented by the Yancey Street gang. They throw a trash can full of trash onto Thing's head. They douse the torch with a bucket of water. When the invisible girl turns invisible, they spray her in the face with sneezing powder. And so they're forced to beat a heavy, hasty retreat from the onslaught of the Yancey Street gang, who continue to never actually be pictured, which I really like. And as they're climbing back into the Fantastic Car to retreat to the safety of the Baxter building, we see this weird little drone following them and filming them. And so they go
back. Obama strikes again.
No, no, that would be missiling them at a wedding.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they retreat to the Baxter building, and they start thinking that the Yancey Street gang seemed too organized this time. Someone must have been putting them up to it. But they have no clue who did it. Even after digging through their file of defeated villains, mostly just an excuse for them to showcase some of the other issues that they've had. And as they're debating this, Alicia shows up, and both Thing and Alicia have the idea in mind that they're going to dump the other one because they're not good enough for each other, which causes them to get into a big argument about how the other one is too good for them. And this makes them realize that they actually do love each other, so they make up in the space of about a page. But it serves to distract everyone from this drone that continues to buzz around outside the windows. And they start opening their fan mail, and the drone makes a little click outside, and this box that was in the fan mail blows up in Thing's face, spraying him with presumably anthrax powder. And he reads this note that's from the Yancey Street gang, telling him to come back at the stroke of midnight if he wants to face them. And he pitches a temper tantrum and smashes up their apartment a bit until he gets yelled at. And then they head back to Yancey Street at midnight to face off against a bunch of civilians, because that's what superheroes do. But fortunately for the civilians of Yancey Street, it turns out that Reed was right, and they were being put up to this by someone. And we realize this when Thing gets knocked the fuck out by a gorilla. And so Reed starts trying to fight with the gorilla. And then they get distracted by this orangutan that starts shooting magnetic waves at Sue. And if this sounds familiar, it shows that you've read previous issues of Fantastic Four. And we get further evidence as a baboon leaps out of nowhere and shoves an asbestos bag over the Human Torch. And then takes out a ray gun and starts trying to shoot the Thing with it. And so Thing goes to punch it, but it escapes by turning into a whole pile of bricks. And we see Reed still fighting with the gorilla. And he eventually gets knocked out by the gorilla. And basically everyone gets incapacitated but Sue, who is then held at gunpoint by the Red Ghost. Because of course he's the Red Ghost in this Super Apes.
If you hadn't figured it out by now.
Yeah. And so they end up having to surrender to him because he has them at gunpoint. They load them up. He loads them all on a spaceship and flies them to the moon. And I want to stop here and call attention to a really cool art technique they used for a little bit at this time. This is the first case where they take actual photos and overlay comic elements over it. I mean, it's dated by modern standards, but for 1964, this would have been groundbreaking. They eventually arrive at the moon, and before they land, the Fantastic Four starts attacking the monkeys, and Red Ghost just escapes because he had expected this was going to happen. And all the apes jump down these escape hatches. And he leaves the rest of the Fantastic Four in the room they were in, which he just jettisons out of his spacecraft, and it crashes on the moon and breaks apart. And he figures they're all going to die because there's no oxygen.
One can only hope.
But Sue has sealed them in a force bubble, and they start looking around for a way out, and they notice that they're right near where the Watcher lives. They just have to get past this whole mountain, And they realize that they don't have time to climb over it before Sue loses her force bubble. But Thing just tunnels under it. And so they tunnel through to the Watcher's house and end up breaking into it. And an illusion of the Watcher shows up and tells them that he's off watching somewhere else right now. And he can't interfere with what's going on with them. But they can shelter in his house if they want, as long as they don't touch anything. Because they can't really understand the stuff that's there. And so Reed immediately starts touching stuff. And he finds this ray that he uses to force the Red Ghost spaceship to the surface of the moon. And so they get out to go fix the spaceship. And get attacked by the Fantastic Four. There's a big old fight for a couple pages. And the Fantastic Four get the best of all the apes and retreat back into the Watcher's house. And the Red Ghost tries to follow them, but Sue shoves him through this random portal she found in Watcher's house. And he gets yeeted off into God only knows where. And the rest of the apes just get into the spaceship and fly away, leaving the Fantastic Four in the Watcher's house. And the Watcher returns and doesn't want them there, so he proceeds to not interfere by teleporting them back to Yancey Street. And they're happy to be back and celebrate even being on Yancey Street, and that's how the story ends.
Wow, that's the second story he hasn't interfered in a row.
Yes.
Okay.
So, what's your thoughts, Dan?
I don't know where to start. It's really convoluted.
It's early Fantastic Four. They pioneered convoluted storytelling.
It seems like whenever the Red Ghost's around, it's going to be convoluted.
Yeah. At the very beginning, like when they're dealing with the gang and that sort of thing, it's just like, you know, you guys do know you're superheroes, right? You know?
That's why I got a kick out of them returning to kick the shit out of a regular gang of just like normal people that aren't even doing anything illegal. They're just playing pranks on them.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, what's the point? But I don't know. I just I don't know. It wasn't particularly enjoyable to listen to. And it wasn't. Yeah, like, there was nothing entertaining about it.
No, I totally get you, because for me, this comic was like the definition of it's fine.
Yeah,
There was nothing interesting or memorable about it, but I didn't mind it at any point.
It's quite a bit of filler. It's not really that important of an issue. It's important for the reappearance of Watcher, although he's not even technically there. It's just a projection of him. So,
no, he showed up in the last he showed up at the end when he teleported them back.
But he was there longer in the first interaction with the Red Ghost.
Yeah, it just felt like there was
nothing important happens in this comic.
Yeah,
it squeaks by with a 3 for me because I didn't dislike it that much. Yeah. But
same with me. I gave it a 3. It was fine to read it.
I popped seeing the Super Apes. So.
Yeah, I like the Super Apes a lot, but this was not their best showing. Like, nothing in this comic was good or important. It's just nothing in this comic was bad either.
The first time I gave them a 2 when they were around, Red Ghost didn't annoy me as much this time, so that's part of the reason I get a 3 this time, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
He wasn't talking about how communism would prevail on every page. That made him less annoying, for sure.
Yeah.
He had a tendency to monologue the first time. I think they were worried that we would forget what his shtick was, despite Red literally being in his name.
Yeah. I don't really have much more to say about that one, to be honest, so...
No,
I'm ready to move on if you guys are.
Yeah. Next is the main event of this... issue area of this episode, even though we have one more to cover after it.
Okay.
So, this one is Amazing Spider-Man issue number 15, simply titled Kraven the Hunter. That's right, the first appearance of Kraven the Hunter. This is Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. The only other credits go to, it would help if I didn't accidentally click something there, Stan Goldberg on colors and Artie Simek on letters. This is a May 1964 release, a 22-page story, and I will take this one. And this is an example of them spoiling a twist on the cover, unlike earlier, unlike the Fantastic Four issue.
Yeah, although it's not the worst spoil because he shows up on like page two.
Yeah, no, it's not really that bad, but I just want the call back to what we were just talking about.
I do think it would have been better if they didn't put him on the cover because he's not a draw. No one bought the comic because the chameleon was on the cover.
Yeah,
yeah, it's not like he's Paste Pot Peter the Porcupine for God's
sake. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it would have made the introduction of him in the story work better if you didn't see him on the cover.
Tell you what, Marvel can do, if Marvel wanted to, they can print the 5-issue Porcupine miniseries. I will buy it.
Oh,
I will
yeah.
buy it.
If they brought Paste Pack, the Paste Pot Pete identity back and did a miniseries about like him getting his powers, I would buy that too.
I'm visualizing a Marvel team up, Porcupine and Paste Pot Pete.
Yeah, let's bring Marvel.
The Avengers.
Let's bring Marvel team up back. Let's do it.
I would read the hell out of that.
I realize it'd be really satirical and silly and totally
tongue in
cheek.
You get it written by the Squirrel Girl team.
Oh, hey, that would actually work because they know
or
how
the,
to do
or the Superior Foes of Spider-Man team. One of those two.
Either one of those creative teams. You get them to write it. That would actually be an excellent comic.
It would be fun. It would be fun. It would bring a bit of the fun back to comics because that's one of the things I think has kind of started to suffer.
Marvel was having its moments bringing that back, and now they're like all those characters that were having great comedy series have kind of slowly disappeared again. And now it's kind of disappeared from not having as much fun comedy series.
Yeah.
You need to do different styles of comics. Everything can't be grim and serious and important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or it can't be this grand epic either. Everything can't be
epic. It doesn't necessarily always need to be epic. I mean, I realize we're in that era now, and the Marvel Universe has probably contributed a great deal to that. But, you know, sometimes a comic should or could just be fun.
I think it's why a title like Guardians of the Galaxy has been struggling to, like, have a series that goes longer than, like, 12 issues for the last little while, last 5 years or so, because of the fact that they always want to do this, it seems like they always want to do a big space epic with them, but sometimes you can't do that for every story.
Yeah, that kind of shows how out of touch they can be, because the Guardians movies are some of the most popular movies they've done.
Yeah.
Precisely because they're campy and fun and goofy.
Yeah,
and
but
not
they did
forced goofy like every other titles become.
Yeah, they did try that with Thor, the fourth Thor movie, but it was just a spectacular failure.
Yeah, because that one was forced. Like Guardians and Thor 3 felt honestly funny. Like they were just fun on their own sake.
And to touch on the Thor 4 fin for a sec. I still haven't seen it, but a lot of people have said how bad it is. And one of the problems that I've seen people comment on a lot and why I think I will be disappointed as well seeing this, that's not the story you try to have a lot of comedy for.
No, you're right. You're absolutely
the story,
right.
What's the word I'm looking for? The story they based that off of is a
it's a super dark story.
It's a very serious, very dark, and very big story. And
yeah, it was Kenneth Branagh.
It's one of the best,
not Taika Waititi. Direct.
It's one of the best series that I've ever read myself.
Yeah,
and then so I'm worried when I finally watch that movie that it's going to be a disappointment because they tried to have so much comedy.
Sorry, Bill. You go ahead.
I was going to say, Ragnarok works for those of us that are not Dan, because the story, like Hela has stakes, but most of what's going on doesn't have that big stakes, so you can have a lot of comedy in it, because, like, really for most of the story, the stakes are, how is Thor going to get off this planet?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you can fill it with a lot of light stuff without destroying the tone. Thor 4 is super heavy and super dark and super high stakes, and they're trying to hit the comedy levels of Thor 3, and it does not work.
Oh, it really doesn't work. Now, we should probably save that conversation
for a future bonus episode.
A bonus cast, right, before I say anything else, because I have
a lot of thoughts, probably.
I do. And big part of it is just how not to make a film, how to take all the great elements that you think should be in a film, throw them in a blender, and hope whatever it is you regurgitate onto the sidewalk comes out more as a, a painting than just vomit.
I'm really looking forward to having this conversation again when I actually see that movie, because that's legitimately a story that's very important to me. So if I and I'm pretty easy to please.
You don't want
to
see that movie. You do not want to see that movie.
Which one?
So
which
I
one?
Could be very upset
four.
After watching that.
Thor 4. Yeah. Well, no. You know what? I think everybody should see it simply to watch Christian Bale's performance.
Okay, that is good. But if that story has a lot of meaning for you.
I love that story. Mm.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite runs of
film. You don't necessarily need to watch Taika Waititi take a massive shit on it.
Yeah, I came away from it like stunningly impressed with Christian Bale.
I've heard he does really good, which is great.
He was incredible.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It's a great fill-in. He plays a great fill-in, so I was happy to hear that.
If you didn't know it was Christian Bale playing the role, you really would just be stunned at how brilliant it was.
Nice. Right.
Well, that's been one of Taika Waititi's strengths in the MCU, because Kate Blanchett...
Casting? That's not him.
No, but actually getting these villain performances out of them, because Kate Blanchett's Hela was really good, too.
Hela, yeah... Yeah, but again, you're talking about two actors that are talented out the yang to begin with, right? Who could do this kind of performance in their sleep, right? So, I'm really reluctant to attribute a whole lot of this to Waititi. I really, really am.
Right? After seeing Thor 4, I start to wonder how much of Thor 3 was just dumb luck on his part. And I thought he was a good director, because, like, I really like Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, Jojo Rabbit wasn't bad.
I thought Jojo was I didn't love the first act of Jojo, but it got really good.
Yeah, like, What We Do in the Shadows was an amusing little aside. It really was. It had some funny and very charming moments. But for the most part, it was just silly.
Right. Yeah, I don't think he has the chops to handle anything serious.
No. No, and Thor 4 proved that. Now, let's go back to the story.
I was trying to get there. I had my hand up ready to... Okay.
Yeah, let's get on with this.
The synopsis for Kraven the Hunter. So, this isn't too long either, so stick with me. Spider-Man swings down and catches a group of organizing... That's not proper grammar. Catches a group organizing a bank robbery, and upon dropping in unexpectedly, a man escapes in a puff of smoke and changes his costume until he can hide. The criminal actually was the Chameleon in disguise, and he plots to rid the world of Spider-Man. The Chameleon comes up with the idea of contacting his friend, Kraven the Hunter. Parker finds this out firsthand when taking photographs for the Daily Bugle as Kraven arrives by boat. Kraven studies Spider-Man's fighting style by organizing a robbery for Spider-Man this time. He finally comes out of hiding and fights Spider-Man. Spider-Man realizes the true strength of Kraven and also realizes that Kraven cheats by infecting his opposition with drugs that weaken them. Spider-Man retreats to fight another day. Pete, however, begins to get the shakes so bad that he can't hold a test tube or shoot a web straight. I actually like that part of the story.
To clarify that scene a little bit... from the synopsis, he gets the shakes because the way he discovered Craven cheats with the drugs is by Craven injecting him with drugs.
Yes. so, yes, he used the drugs on Spider-Man.
Kind of an important detail they glossed over.
A little bit. He tracks Craven's future location by attaching a spider tracer and is led into a nearby forest where he faces Craven. After a few tricks and traps, Spider-Man finally catches hold of what appears to be Craven, but is actually the chameleon in disguise. After learning this, Spider-Man hunts down and finds the real Craven and intimidates and overpowers him with his agility and strength. After fighting, Craven ends up running into a giant sticky web to be picked up by the police. Craven and the chameleon are then deported, with Craven swearing revenge upon Spider-Man.
That was the part where Sam rescued him, wasn't it? Like, yeah, with Sting and him. Okay, no problem. Sorry. It's relatable. Wanting to get rid of Spider-Man. Dudes, Craven, if you're out there, you're listening, I'm on your side. You need help. You know.
Maybe Sony's Craven's too busy being a... being an activist. I can't believe Sony's like, yeah, let's take the Kraven the Hunter character and make him an animal activist.
Yeah, talk about not understanding a character's motivations.
Oh, I love Sony sometimes and what goes for their brains. It's beautiful.
No, it's really not. It's just not.
I can't wait for the El Muerto.
Yeah. Now, you know what? This was a pointless episode, pointless story too.
This was a pointless episode. Thanks for coming, Dan.
Hey, anytime. Yeah, the whole thing, pointless.
This was a really fun read. A lot of it's fighting, like Bill said earlier, yeah. And I gave this one 4 stars.
Relationship drama.
Yes,
because the synopsis overlooked the whole part about Betty getting super jealous because Liz Allen was interested in Peter now.
Yeah, Liz keeps
Peter
falling around
talking
Peter.
To him. Despite Peter constantly trying to get rid of her, and every time he's trying to get rid of her, Betty sees it and thinks he's hitting on her.
This one was pretty fun. It barely squeaks by with a 4, but I gave it like a solid 4, so.
Yeah, this was a 4 for me too. I had a lot of fun. I was much like Green Goblin, I was a little disappointed because I expected to go 5.
Yeah. Me too. That's exactly how I felt here too. Because I love Kraven the Hunter. He's a great
film. I mean, Kraven's Last Hunt is still one of my favorite stories.
Oh yes, that'll be a beauty whenever if we ever reach that on this podcast.
Right.
Oh, you might even like it. It's a pretty good one. There's themes you might like.
Spider-Man kind of dies.
Not soon enough.
But anyways, yeah. I guess we'll move on to the main event, not main event here, in Daredevil issue number 3. So
Spider-Man had to beat traffic.
Oh, I'm the only one that gets that joke, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, you really are.
Daredevil number 3, titled The Owl, Ominous Overlord of Crime. This one's a Stan Lee title, shocking. We got art by Joe Orlando, who debuted in issue number 2 for the art. Inks done by Vincent Coletta. Is this his debut or was that last issue? I forget, I'm going to check real fast.
I think this is his debut on Daredevil.
No, last issue.
But he's inked some Thor stuff.
Yeah, this he debuted last issue of Daredevil, and this is the second one in our order we're doing. I think his next works are his journey.
He inked some of the journeys we've covered already.
Do they say who the colorist is?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he started with Daredevil 2, and then he did 106 and 107, the last journeys we did.
They have not credited the colorist in it, no. So if you have a colorist for it...
I have no idea who the colorist is, but I think he deserves a great deal of credit, right, looking at the cover and the fact that the owl is not all green.
Yeah. He's not credited, so I suspect it's Joe.
Okay, yeah.
Usually when they don't credit a separate colorist, it's the artist.
Yeah.
It's just hard to tell who the bad guy is.
Jack Kirby and Vincent Coletta are the cover artists. Sam Rosen is the letter.
I'm so confused.
June, oh my god, Dan Fink is the guy with the gun and the brown hat. That's the
following. Well, obviously, he's the bad guy.
June 1964 release, 22-page story, and last but title but not least, or is it? Who knows? We'll find out. It's Dan.
The wrongly accused crooked businessman named the Owl has just been taken to court over tax fraud. He's clearly not a bad guy. He's not wearing a green suit.
Inside the comic, he has a green coat.
Oh.
You just ruined it.
Okay. You've ruined it for me. Thank you, Bill. Just give me a nice paper cut, pour some lemon juice in it. Why don't
what,
you?
Now, what? Yeah. What
come on, I had a theme. Shut up. I had a theme going here.
What inspiration does Dan have to read this comic now?
Yeah, I was on a roll. I'm going to be all confused over who the bad guy is. Anyway, the Owl hires Nelson and Murdoch, chosen at random from the phone book, to represent him. When Foggy initially turns him down, Matt insists on taking the case to learn more about him. What's the matter, Matt? Just couldn't read it in the papers? Oh, wait. No, you couldn't. Sorry. However, when the Owl blows off his court hearing...
Give it a couple issues. Cheap brother.
Yeah. Daredevil investigates to find out what his wayward client is up to. He searches all over the city, but fruitlessly. So he returns to work, sending Karen home for the night. Meanwhile, the Owl has recruited two powerful, but not superhuman, thugs and nearly kills them to prove his own powers, including low-level flight capabilities. Yeah.
The synopsis doesn't even tell you the names of the guys because it doesn't really matter. That's great.
The Owl decides to set Matt Murdock up to be his fall guy. Ooh. Later, leaving the office as the Daredevil, Matt suddenly notices that there are people in the next office and realizes it's the Owl and some of his thugs. Daredevil battles them until Karen shows up to retrieve her purse. The Owl's men grab Karen and hold her hostage. Surrendering, Daredevil and Karen are taken to the Owl's airy base, where Daredevil frees himself and Karen and sends her away in a car as he fights the Owl personally. Wow, it's poorly written. The Owl's henchmen have gone to contact other mob bosses, whom the Owl hopes to impress by killing Daredevil. Daredevil is fed through a trapdoor into the river below, but then, chased out of his own base by the approaching police, the Owl tries to escape in a boat. Daredevil manages to upend it and knock him overboard, after which point he loses track of him. Wow. Too bad you didn't have, like, sonar or something. You could, like, figure out where he's going.
I wonder... Oh, wait. Too bad you weren't a film
sarcastic?
Based around... What's that bird?
What, continuity? Returning to shore, because his sonar is obviously useless, Daredevil switches back into Matt Murdock and waits for the police to round up the crooks. Karen is surprised to see Matt there, soaking wet, in a Daredevil suit, and suspects the similarity between the two men.
You're starting to see why I let you take this one.
So how did he switch back to Murdoch?
They omitted one of the important details of this. He invented a backpack for his costume that he could put his civilian clothes in and wear around on his back for exactly 1.5 issues.
Waterproof backpack.
Waterproof but not grab-proof, as the next issue will showcase, which is why it only lasts for like 1.5 issues.
And you know what? Actually, in the notes, literally in the notes, it says, in this issue, Daredevil develops a hood to store civilian clothes in when in costume. This hood is later discarded, only one issue after its debut.
Yeah, he gets grabbed in the next issue by a guy on it, and he's just like, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Because it's literally just a leather backpack he's wearing. He looks like he's going to superhero school.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for giving me this episode, Ryan. Remind me to freaking pee in your cornflakes tomorrow morning.
My favorite part about all of this is how they spend like 4 pages establishing the henchmen, and then they leave before Daredevil arrives. And we never see them
okay.
again.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of these guys show up for one and one only appearance. Right? Yeah, like Ape Horgan, Sad Sam, Sims. Right? They only show up once. Ever. To this point. Oh, God. Oh. Why are you sending weird pictures?
Because you had to see how stupid that backpack looks.
Oh. Oh, you got to be freaking kidding me. Seriously?
Yep. That's it.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty freaking terrible. Okay, yeah, so that was just an utter waste of paper. Although, you know what? Looking at it from an entirely different point of view, it's still a waste of paper. I think Daredevil's going through the same growing pains as the rest of them did.
Yes, but his will last far, far longer. Like, yeah, until Frank Miller in the 80s.
Oh, we're not talking Ben Affleck playing Daredevil? That long?
Oh, he gets growing pains again after Frank Miller leaves.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. At least he doesn't always keep the red and yellow costume. That's
horrifying. You don't
like
the thing that looks like it was designed by a blind man?
No. Really don't. It's horrible. Just horrible.
Yeah, the yellow costume is not good.
No, that's... Oh, that's horrible. And the cover's horrible.
Ryan, you're muted.
Genuinely terrible.
God damn it.
Did you unplug yourself?
No, I was just... I must hit the mute button at some point.
Wow.
I've been trying to talk and I was...
No,
that's why no-selling everything you said.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know how long I've been muted.
Oh, for the whole episode.
I know not that long, but...
Oh, yeah, we haven't heard a word you said all night.
Even time she directly responded was just coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an episode of Doctor Who. Blink. We just already know what you're going to say. I give this one a 3.
I do, absolutely. Mostly on the strength of the art.
That's one of the things that I was saying, actually, while I was muted. That this one squeaked
I give this one a 3.
Well, this one's partly, actually, I let historical significance play into this one a little. I was like, if I could give this a 2.5, I would, but I have to go 3.
Yeah.
In that case.
I actually enjoyed it enough for a 3 because despite the plot holes and so, it was actually pretty fun. Like, the hood is stupid and looks stupid, but I was having a blast laughing at all the pictures of Matt fighting with this thing flapping around behind him and stuff.
Well, yeah, but who's the bad guy?
I was saying
I can't
that
tell.
The one in green, just because Jack didn't color him right.
I was saying that besides the stupid stuff that happened in the issue, it was a pretty fun one, so that's part of the reason I get the 3.
Sure, yeah. Hilarious. I hurt myself. My ribs are hurting from laughing. It was so much fun. Oh, can we just bail on this episode?
Well, on that note, we'll talk about what we're covering next week, which, fun fact...
It's more crap.
That was the last spin that I've read, so all the stuff for next week I haven't read yet, so I don't really have any thoughts on them yet. I'm just trying to get back to the page. Here we go.
I have no thoughts on them either.
Wow. That's shocking.
I know, right? Yeah.
The first spin we're going to start off with is Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, issue number 9, finally in every issue where they have the mission to capture Adolf Hitler. So this is a Please Read Our Comic issue, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like that title. Then we're going to move on to, we don't get a break from him, as here is Daredevil back, issue number 4, and the debut of a one of my boys, who I guess he's not too much of a boy.
I'd argue Kilgrave is too prominent to be a boy.
He's too prominent now to be
a boy. Ooh, spoiler.
Title is Kilgrave the Unbelievable Purple Man.
Yeah,
so.
Kilgrave the Purple Man debuts in issue 4 of Daredevil.
And just to be clear, if you're just doing the main order and not World War II, there's literally no break into Daredevil. It's just Daredevil into Daredevil.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing Spider-Man number 16 comes after that, where Daredevil shows up in Spider-Man, because this is a Daredevil and Spider-Man heavy section. Two of Dan's favorites. Tales to Astonish issue 59 comes after that, where we see the Hulk enter the title as Giant Man tries to reason with him. Seems like that will go well. And then we'll end off with The Journey and the Mystery, issue number 108, which has Nay in a B story. The A story is a Human Torch story, which she's... Oh, it's Journey and the Mystery. Did I say Strange Tales or Journey? No, Journey
and
the Mystery 108.
You said Journey and then started talking about Human Torch for no reason.
I don't know why. I was thinking it was Strange Tales for some reason. Journey and the Mystery 108, A story sees Thor at the mercy of Loki, and then the B story sees Thor... trapped by trolls. So, yeah.
Kind of like us. Oh, wait, that's B. Never mind.
So, yeah, tune back next week for what should hopefully will be a good episode. I don't know. I haven't read the comics yet.
Just as an aside, you remember how they were talking about how Tales of to Astonish was going to, like, full-length stories? We see how long it lasts. Because they have the Hulk guest starring here to pave the way for the issue after that being 50% Hulk story.
Yeah, so that will be the last 18-pager, I guess.
Yeah, then it goes to 10 and 11 pages split between Giant Man and Hulk.
Wow.
He really does enter the
series. Just horrible. Just horrible.
Although we won't be covering any of those Hulks for ages... Because it's an incredibly long ongoing Hulk story. Giant Man will be out of the title before we loop back and start covering Hulk.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're soon enough going to be entering, we're going to be entering parts of the order where it's long stretches of titles for actual, like, story arcs and stuff.
Yeah. Although the splitting of the titles is a pretty key milestone in early Marvel.
Yeah.
So it's exciting that we're getting to that.
Yeah, hopefully it remains exciting as we start to read them.
At that point, Tales to Astonish becomes Giant Man and Hulk. Suspense is Iron Man and Captain America. And Strange Tales is Human
Nick
Torch
Fury.
And Doctor Strange.
Nick Fury and Doctor Strange it becomes.
Yeah, but that's after Torch gets canceled.
Yeah, which will come soon enough, really.
It's about another year.
It's about another 10 issues, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, close to a year, and then...
Because I think it's issue 135
Torch and
that
Giant
comes
Man both get canceled and replaced with Submariner and Nick Fury.
It's 134, 135 that Nick Fury comes in, so it's another 11 or 12 issues. So about a year, like you said. But yeah, I guess if you're watching this on YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to. We're available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify, and tell us why your favorite story was the Beatles story. We will see you all next week. Come back for some Daredevil, and peace out.
Have a good one.
See you later.